Welcome to The Lorraine Murphy Show. I'm an entrepreneur on my second business, a mentor, an author, wife to a fellow entrepreneur, and mother to a magical little girl. On my podcast, I explore topics that fascinate me that will help you unlock ideas to rise even higher in your life. Myself and my special guests will be talking entrepreneurship and how to build better businesses, organization and figuring out how to get more shit done quicker and smarter, staying in touch with our soul, and how to blend business babies with real babies. Let's jump in to this week's episode. Welcome to this week's episode of The Lorraine Murphy Show. So if you are not already aware, this season of the podcast is all about one of my greatest passions, which is business. I've had my own business since 2012, and entrepreneurship is a pursuit I devote a ton of time, energy, and focus to, whether it's growing my own business or mentoring others in theirs. In this season, I'm taking you behind the scenes of my business, as well as interviewing business owners I respect enormously. And this week's episode features a businesswoman like that. Naomi Whitfield left school at 15 and went on to found organic spa brand IKU. With her husband Paul's assistance, the business has grown at a phenomenal rate, starting as a wholesale business, opening bricks and mortar stores, a spa, securing global distributors, and establishing powerful e-commerce success. And Naomi also published her first book, Energize Your Life, last year. I was thrilled to sit down and talk to Naomi because I've been, you probably hear this in the interview, an absolute fangirl about the brand that she has created. And we've been in touch over text and Instagram and email for the last few years. So this was actually our first time meeting in person. And yeah, I could have spent all day with her. She was just incredible. In our conversation, Naomi shares how suffering from eczema for 19 years planted the seed for her future business, the secrets behind how she built such a renowned brand, and why one of our greatest roles as entrepreneurs is to police our own brand. We explain this more in the interview. Herself and Paul's first trade show experience and why they had to pack peanut butter sandwiches, the step-by-step and serendipitous process to opening their first bricks and mortar store, the three decisions that most influenced the success of the business. So much gold in here. The insane growth of the e-commerce side of IKU. You'll hear in the interview, I was literally, my jaw was on the floor when she shared how quickly it's growing. And also she shares how they have achieved that growth, how she leverages risk mitigation as a planning strategy, how she and Paul navigate working so closely together as husband and wife and business partners, the impact that winning two Telstra awards had on the business, how a brush with death in 2015 fundamentally changed her approach to life and also the business. This is a bloody powerful story. How she helps team members grow into their roles and how she does that. The artist, the manager, leader, and the entrepreneur, and how understanding the difference between each led her to the most key hire she has made in her business. And also why she believes the more you do, the braver you get. This is an absolute knockout of an interview. There's so much gold in here. I hope you enjoy it as much as I enjoyed having the conversation with Naomi. So let's bring it on. Hello, I am here with Naomi Whitfield, and she's the founder of IKU, which is a brand that I have known and loved for many, many years. I'm sure we'll talk about my history with your beautiful business during this chat. So welcome so much to the show, Naomi. Thank you for joining me.
Thank you, Lorraine. Such a pleasure to be here.
We've already been talking for about an hour. So I kind of got to the point where like, okay, Naomi, I actually have to hit record because you're sharing so much gold that I want to capture for this podcast interview. So I'm really excited to chat to you. And actually, maybe as a starting point, would you maybe just for those who aren't as in love with IKU as I am just yet, can you explain just a little snapshot about what the business is before we get into how you built it?
Absolutely. So IKU is a Japanese word and it means to rest, to relax, to restore. So everything that we're doing is to inspire people to enjoy some time for themselves every day, to de-stress, to care for themselves. We make organic skincare, bath and body products, herbal teas, natural candles. It's the whole spa lifestyle.
Yeah. Beautiful. And can you tell us about, so I know it's been a long, huge road for you and Paul, your beautiful husband?
Yes.
A partner, husband. Yes, you're married. I thought you were. And building this together. So can you tell us about what are the kind of the key decisions that got you to where you are now? And what's your official role in IKU? Are you COO? How do you... Maybe we'll get into that in a few minutes because I want to ask you about you and Paul.
Absolutely.
So key decisions to get you to where you are now.
Yeah. So Paul and I have worked together running other people's businesses for many years. Our skills are quite opposite, but our values are the same. So I always describe us as being like jigsaw pieces that cross over in the middle. And really, I feel like without each other, we'd never fully complete a task. We really do create such a complete picture together. And I think, you know, it's just so fabulous to have that support to achieve big things as well.
Mm.
So we've run other people's businesses for many years. And then finally we decided back in 2007 that it was time to follow our own dreams and do something that was all about what we loved and believed in, have full creative control of, and I guess just really test our skills.
Yeah. And so when you say you were running other businesses, were you running spa brands? Is this your background?
No. So I grew up in a regional environment.
Yeah.
And so my opportunities for work have always been whatever came up. I used to love art when I first left school. I left school at 15, actually.
Wow. Where were you from?
Horsham in Victoria.
Okay.
A little country town. Yeah. 12,000 people, very tiny. And I was just bored in school. It just wasn't challenging me. And I remember feeling like I was with a bunch of children, which I was, but I just wanted to be the adult that was out in the adult world. And so I left school and didn't know what opportunities that I would follow. It was actually on my 15th birthday. So I didn't even finish out the year.
You know,
year.
It's funny that you said that because as another podcast guest in this season is Bianca Molny, and she actually left school a year early.
Yeah.
As well. So it's funny. You're only the second person I've interviewed so far for the show and you've both left school early.
Yeah, interesting.
Yeah.
It's funny. I remember the principal called my mother and I into the office and he said, Naomi, do you realize with your math skills, you could be an accountant one day? And, you know, obviously that's come in handy with the business.
Yes.
My role now could not be further than
so what did your parents say when you said you wanted to leave school early?
They were very supportive. So I think, for them, my dad ran his own building business.
Okay.
So he'd always been used to creating his own work and through his own skills. We had five children in our family, so mm-hmm. my mom cared for all of us.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess because of that, chasing a career plus our regional environment wasn't something that was really in their mindset. They were just happy for us kids to be happy and, you know, make a living
mm-hmm.
and, you know, work hard in whatever it was that we did. And it was funny. My dad was actually building a childcare center in the town and he got me a job. He got me my first job at 15. So I ended up in the toddler's room. Funny, I wanted to get away from being with kids at school to become an adult, ended up working with kids.
Even younger ones.
I loved it. I absolutely loved it. So, you know, that taught me some really great skills about being in the workforce and all of that responsibility. Then I went on to become a private nanny for mm-hmm. two doctors. And that was great because I could develop my own structure for the children. So it's sort of like each role that I've done then led me to the next. As those children grew up, I wanted to pursue my love of art. I had such a passion for art. And there was a local art gallery that also did picture framing. So I went in there, got a job, and used to sell artwork in the galleries. It was back in the day where ProArt used to sell by the square inch. So the bigger the piece, the more that it would cost.
Yeah.
And I discovered I was a very good salesperson too. It wasn't just that I was selling what I loved, but I also just loved the art of selling
mm-hmm.
and matching people to their needs. The picture framing side of things was also really great because people would bring in things for their exhibitions and I would help them to choose the picture frames for that, what colors suited. Then we traveled and
so what age were you now? Sorry, when you did.
So by then I would have been 23.
So you met Paul, you said earlier you met him when you were 18.
When I was 18.
Yeah. So he's from Horsham as well?
No.
Okay.
Paul's actually from Canberra originally.
Right.
But we met in Mudgee. His parents had moved to Mudgee and my grandmother introduced us.
Love it.
She loved love. She just loved romance. And I remember when I went to visit, because I'd already left home and then moved back. I'd been working in the ski fields as a nanny for the director of the ski school there. And then when summer came, I moved back home just for a little while. And I remember my dad saying to me, you really should come on this family holiday to see your grandmother. And I thought I was too grown up to go on a family holiday. You know, I'd left school. I'd moved away from home. I was like, I'm not sitting in the back of the car with my sisters. And my dad convinced me that it might be the last time that I see my grandmother because of her age. You know how
they love that card. Yep.
And then he bought me a Walkman back in the day as bribery to say I could just plug into some music. So I thought that was pretty cool. So went. And then when I saw my grandmother, she said, "You've got to meet the gardener's son. He's such a cutie." And I thought to myself, oh, what would Nana know about, you know, what sort of guy would be appealing to me? Well, I met the gardener's son and we just never stopped talking. We had so much in common right from the start. And I think for both of us as well, because we were both in this regional environment that wasn't particularly by choice, it just gave us an outlet to go, let's just get out of here.
Yes.
And so we did. It was funny, we moved to what most people would still call the regional environment, but it had 80,000 people instead of 12. So we moved to Ballarat.
Yes. And I've never been. I really want to go.
Yeah, I think it's changed quite a lot from the days that we were down there. So we left there in 96. So, yeah, it's been a long time now, but looks like it's really, really come ahead. We loved it there, except for the cold. It was very cold and dark all the time.
Yeah. So thank you. So you went traveling with Paul?
Yes.
Yeah. And the travel book bit in a big way from what you were saying earlier.
It did. And so when we landed back in Australia, we decided we didn't want to go back to Victoria. We needed to, you know, change things up. And we'd already bought a house. We bought a house quite young.
Nice one.
And we'd sold the house, put everything into storage, landed in Sydney, and then both picked up work in Sydney straight away, even though the Blue Mountains were always calling to us. I just love that fresh air. It's still close to the city. It's so magic.
Maybe that's why I love Iku so much, that I love the Blue Mountains, like a little piece of the Blue Mountains.
Yeah, you can feel it every time you open a pot of
Yeah, products. That's what it feels like. Yeah.
Yeah, that good energy. So I was running a picture framing business for quite a while. It involved quite a lot of travel. And so Paul had rejoined his old company. Just, you know, both of us took what work that we could just to replenish the finances. And my work was getting quite busy and it was commission based. And because I'm such a good salesperson, I was selling way more than they ever imagined. So I was earning enough for two people.
Wow.
Well and truly. And, you know, it was really taking the business to the next level just by working smarter rather than harder, actually.
Yeah.
When I took over the runs from the previous guy before me, he used to sell a lot of lower priced items. And I remember saying to the owner of the company, "Does it matter where I'm selling to? Can I get my own clients?" And they said, "Absolutely, as long as we're busy." So I started going to interior designers and more the high-end market, which I loved as well.
Yeah.
It's so beautiful to work around quality.
Yeah.
And I was getting so busy with that. My days were so long. I'd often do day trips to Canberra from the Blue Mountains, for example. And we ended up deciding that Paul, if he left his job, he could renovate our house. He could get our house finished and also work with me part-time and help me with some of the driving and lifting all these heavy artworks. Oftentimes you'd have to lug them up flights of stairs and hold them over beds to show people what they looked like.
Yeah, of course.
So it's quite handy having him around.
And this, we're still in Sydney, yeah?
So at that stage, we'd been in Sydney and then just moved to the Blue Mountains.
Oh, so you went to the Blue Mountains.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, so only in Sydney for 4 months. And then it didn't matter where we were living. Yeah. An opportunity became available. So we went, let's just go to the mountains and we can still do our work from here.
Yeah.
So we ran that together for a couple of years and then it was quite stressful. Our employer was challenging, to say the least.
Mm-hmm.
And we just decided that life was more than just putting yourself through difficult days, even if you loved the work. I think it's very important that you feel supported by the team that you're with
and
that,
100%.
That you just feel free to also be able to do your work. So we left that job and I was in a pretty stressful state by then. I was suffering severely from panic attacks. Every time I'd get to work, if I knew that I would see the man that was running the business,
holy crap,
I'd be vomiting, I'd have diarrhea. It was, I think, you know, at that age too, you don't cope as well perhaps with those sort of challenges, but it was really affecting me physically. Paul and I both were severe eczema sufferers, so we already had a stress condition with our skin. Paul was born with eczema, actually, and that was one of the things when we first met. He went home and he said to his mum, "I've met a girl and she's got eczema."
It's meant to be.
Yeah, because, you know, people would be so harsh because of your skin. Well,
especially kids can be so cruel as well.
And even Paul's first boss, he used to say to him, you'll never have a girlfriend because no girl will ever want you to touch her with hands like those. You're a leper, he would call him.
Oh, gosh.
Yeah, so, you know, those things really imprint on you. And I think we met and we got each other. We understood what that felt like. It's quite demoralizing to your confidence. Mine was on my face. It was all over my face. And people thought I was a burns victim.
Gosh.
So I'd be walking up the street and I'd hear children say, Mummy, what happened to that lady? They'd be so shocked by the redness on my skin.
Yes.
And the mum would say, shh, don't be rude. She's been burnt in a fire.
Oh.
And so that was what, you know, my teen years had looked like. My eczema started when I was 11. And then lasted until I was about 30, which is when we started getting really serious about trying to find a solution for our skin.
19 years, Naomi.
And Paul even longer because he was born with it.
Yeah.
So it's funny, you know, I think it's all of those things that I'm grateful for, actually, because without them it would not have led me to an interest in wellness that then became the knowledge that we've used to develop for IKU.
Mm-hmm.
Because we're not just a brand that's about superficial beauty and just putting products on your skin for perfection. We're about being a brand that changes the way that you feel.
Mm.
Because stress is such a big part of skin conditions, mental health.
Yeah.
And the more that we can control that mind-body connection, the healthier and happier that we can be as a whole.
Yeah.
And it was actually that led us to a knowledge, like, as you can see, I don't get eczema anymore.
No, neither does Paul. Amazing. Yeah.
And it was after we started exploring natural ingredients. And we started realizing what we were already putting onto our skin that doctors were recommending. And then when we combined that with rituals of relaxation, moments of breathing space, knowing where your boundaries and your limits are, all of that just combined to heal our skin long term. So that's the message now that we share today through IKU, and because I know that it works from us.
Yes, yes. Love. So you were running the picture framing business, and then was that the launch pad for IKU then? Yeah, or was there another role in between?
We left that job and we cycled around Tasmania for a month because we just wanted to get that out of our system.
Yes.
It really had been stressful.
We had to purge it. Yeah.
We did. And especially once we resigned, we had to give, I think it was, you know, 4 or 6 weeks notice. It was quite a long time. And of course, once we'd resigned, the pressure got even worse.
Yes.
So we packed up our bikes. We cycled around Tasmania. That was back just before the new millennium, actually. That was end of 99. And then when we landed back in the mountains, I picked up some casual work at a local retail store that just happened to have a gallery attached to it. Worked my way up to become manager there very quickly and loved it, absolutely loved it. I ended up hiring Paul. He was a fantastic help. So again, you know, I had my right-hand man there who was the behind the scenes that helped keep everything running. And that was really where we explored the side of branding. Mm. So we were given quite full creative control within that business. And when we first started, we could see that they were a very well-established business. They had a very good client base and they'd been going for quite a few years, but I could see that they didn't understand branding. And branding's what I love in a business. I think that's where you really communicate and connect with customers. For me, it's the fun side.
It's funny that you said you had such a passion for art. I presume you still do. It's like an art form, I think, creating a brand.
It's
such a creative process.
And it's visual and it's verbal and it's a whole, you're creating a whole identity.
Yeah. And creating an energy, I think, as well. I felt like with my first business, The Remarkables Group, there was a whole energy to that.
Oh, it's the best time as a creator, isn't it?
Yeah.
I love the energy of it.
Yeah.
So it really gave us time to explore that. That was where Paul taught himself graphic design skills.
Yep.
He taught
himself how to build business.
Websites.
So. Very handy.
Absolutely. His passion for photography, which we'd always had a dark room in our house and he always loved photography, but he was then able to take that to a commercial level for that business. I learned buying skills and budgeting skills. So it was such a fantastic opportunity for me to have to have those responsibilities, but in a safe way that I was already working with a business that was already established, but being able to grow that. And we did that for 7 years, absolutely loved it, built up a great team around us of people that just celebrated the art of retail.
Mm.
We used to exhibit Paul's artwork there. I'd theme things seasonally. It was very creative, but also used both sides of my brain because it was also very much about commercial success.
Yeah.
And in fact, We grew the business 300% during the time that we were there. It was fantastic. Just seeing
it
the
sounds like you ran branding. It like your own business.
I loved it. I really, yeah. In fact, a lot of people thought that it was because we did love it so much and we loved the team.
God, it's like, God, if we could all have one of you and Paul in every business.
I agree. And in fact, I do think that there's a place for that too. Mm. I really appreciate my staff that, because all of us can't be entrepreneurs. All of us can't be the business owner. But we need those people to keep our businesses running. And so I really value my staff that are happy to be the woman that supports the woman.
Yes, yeah.
Not the one that is the business owner. And I think, you know, for some of us, we like to stay there because we get that good work-life balance. And then there's others like myself that want to take it to that next level where I think for me I was becoming more and more interested in natural living.
Yeah.
And that was what my lifestyle was more about. And I was really wanting to work in a business that was promoting more about health and well-being, and that business wasn't. And so it just felt like the natural time to move on and create our own thing and our own vision. Mm. And at the time, I never even knew what we would do. I just knew we needed to do something and we needed to go. Yeah. And of course, that's two people, two incomes.
Yes, exactly.
With a mortgage.
Yeah.
So it was a pretty brave thing when we left our jobs.
So what were you leaving to do?
Well, at that stage, we thought it would be freelance brand development.
Okay. Yes. How wrong you are.
Absolutely. I soon found that out within about 2 months.
Yes.
So what I started doing was actually helping a lot of day spas and retreat accommodation facilities create their branding. So we would help them with photo shoots, catalogs, spa brochures. It's funny, I'd often style the shoot, but then I'd be the foot or the back model that Paul would be shooting. I'm used to wearing many, many hats to achieve an end result. And I think Paul's side of it was very fulfilling for him. He loved it. He obviously had a lot more work to do in that project than I did, because once I'd created the concept for what it would be that we'd be doing, he would, and I'd sketched all of that out, he'd then have to physically go off and do that on a computer. Mm-hmm. Whereas I'm a Taurine and I like to work hard. I like to be busy from dawn till dusk. And I just felt like I needed something more. And I also felt this overwhelming desire that it should be what I believed in. Sometimes we'd be creating brochures that I'd be cringing for what the design brief was, going, oh my God, I hope nobody knows this is my work because it's just ugly or it's not on brand. I really noticed that a lot of people were trying to communicate what another person's brand was to copy or mimic.
Got it. Yeah.
But not their own vision. And I could see what their strengths were. And if they just honed in on them and stayed true to that, they would attract their own market. And therefore, their competitors wouldn't really be like competitors. Mm-hmm. And so for me, I decided that I really wanted to create my own brand. And I guess it was that independent spirit too. I wanted to do something that was my own vision without somebody dictating what that vision should be. Mm-hmm. And, of course, that was Iku, because that's what my whole life was about.
Yeah.
Rituals of rest and relaxation, caring for your skin, caring for your mind. Making products that, for me, I'd always made these things for myself and friends and family, but making my own products that I could really put my own energy and my own knowledge into.
Yeah.
And also that the brand could look and feel the way that I wanted to communicate it, which was non-gender specific, non-age specific, very minimal.
It gave you breathing space. So true. It is very generic in a nice way.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I think the breathing space, that even the simplicity of our name not telling you what it means, that it just washes over you. I've always said that I wanted Iku to be a brand, not that you think, but a brand that you feel.
Yeah. You so nailed that. That's so true.
And I think when people come into our stores, they always say to us, I don't know why. Even men will say it, that perhaps aren't as in tune with their feelings as some of the holistic type women that come into our business. They say, I don't know why, but I just feel healthy when I just walk in your door. Mm. And that's exactly what I wanted people to feel.
I feel very calm and I feel very centered and in my body when I walk into your stores.
I love that.
Yeah. And I should explain. So my history, I guess, with Iku was, we used to live in Woollahra, myself and my, lived there for 5 years. And I was walking up to get my nails done on Oxford Street one day and I just noticed that a new store had opened and I went in and I was offered a beautiful cup of herbal tea and I was like, what is this place? And I think I brought about 7 candles. And, you know, I still remember it's, which one is it? It's the lime and coconut.
Happiness. Yeah.
I still remember it was my first home with Wade. Like, 'cause we'd moved into, I rented there. He lived with me for a year in my share house. And then we moved into this beautiful little, like, it's the house I actually started my first business in. But I still, when I smell that candle, I'm like back there. And it was such a happy home for us. So yeah, that's how I feel it. So just stepping back. So you decided you were going to start the brand consultancy business. And then you said, actually, no, I want to build my own brand. But that's pretty full on.
Yes.
Because you can do brand consulting with a laptop and some Wi-Fi and a phone.
Neither two is a wonderful thing.
What did you do then? So, and what was the vision at that point?
We still had then Paul's creative branding work to fall back onto
to give us
a little bit of time. So we spent 6 months developing Iku. And initially it was going to be that Iku would be just my baby.
Yep.
And Paul would still do his branding and I would consult to that. But then it became very clear as the vision started coming together and I started, instead of doing a business plan, I did a mood board.
Yes.
Art. Of course.
Yes.
And as it was coming together and I was, even on my mood board, I had my target customers, which were 5-star resorts and hotels.
Yeah.
Did not aim low here. This was not ever going to be a market stall brand. I loved day spas because of our love of travel. I loved beautiful hotels and resorts. And I wanted to create products that were going to bring that sensory wellness experience to those locations as well. And so we could very quickly see that the brand was going to become something more. And so Paul's involvement then started going more and more from just helping set up an initial website and the labels for our products. Eventually, we were going to outsource the candle making. And then we'd been researching because my philosophy is only to use natural wax. Mm. I don't use any paraffins or colors in our candles. And we were trying to find a candle maker in Australia that could do that in just in 100% natural wax for us. And we couldn't find it.
Mm.
And I suddenly realized even on a lot of the labels where a candle will say soy wax, you think that would have to be soy. Do you realize there's no legislation? You can just put a little bit of soy in that
and
it can still be a paraffin candle.
Yes.
And I realized, you know, there's a market for everybody.
I'm sure I've been caught so many times with that one.
Wow. Absolutely. And so for us, we wanted our market to be natural. Mm. And so Paul started then dabbling in candle making.
I saw photos in your incredible book. Yes. I saw photos of him making candles in your kitchen in those early days.
Absolutely. He said to me, how hard can it be? Because people were saying, I think, you know, it was definitely, it did feel like a bit of a gender thing, I have to say, when I was trying to source. I was always consulting with men that were running these businesses that would look at me as if I didn't understand the technicalities. And they would say, look, love, you need to put a bit of paraffin in it to make it burn. It won't burn without that. Or others would talk about the costings of producing it with natural wax. And I think Paul had got so tired of me hitting these brick walls that he just went, how hard can it be?
Yeah.
Stole my pots and pans out of the kitchen and started dabbling. And it certainly, you know, I did take a lot of time and development to perfect the burning so that the essential oils would also release. Sometimes they just burn off as fuel and you're not actually smelling anything through the room.
Yeah.
And, yeah, he's proven that you can make a 100% natural plant wax candle.
Yeah.
But by then his fate was sealed. He was definitely full-time in the business.
Yes. He poached him. So what was the plan at that point? Were you going to start a storefront? Like, how are you going to sell things?
No, I never actually intended a store.
You were just
going to
be
a store.
You'd have stockers.
At that stage, it's funny, you know, I think maybe I just didn't want to scare myself by thinking too far ahead beyond what my comfort zone was. And because I wasn't business trained, I think it felt safe for me to think one stage at a time. And even though I'd loved retail and I'd loved the physicality of a store and how that, you know, represents a brand better than anything, where I knew was safe for us to start was to take on stockists of our brand. Mm. And what I was seeking with our target market would be a combination of retail stores that did really beautiful retail that you would go and buy gifts from.
Yep.
And also you'd have the other end of the scale where you'd have the high-end resorts and hotels that you could also have an Iku treatment in. So you could use our products like body scrubs or massage oils. And then in their retail store, the guests that were staying at the hotel could also buy things to take back to their room to enjoy. So initially wholesale was going to be.
Because it was fully wholesale. You weren't selling direct to consumer.
Not at
all.
Not at all at that stage. So we officially launched we did our first sales in November 2007.
Yes.
Which was we left.
God, you're such a veteran.
We left our jobs in June. So in November was when we sold our first products. That was to a local gift store. And then in February was when we really launched. We did a trade fair and that was when we became an instant success overnight.
So I should explain that Beautiful, Paul. Drove you here today and we were chatting as we were setting up for the podcast interview. And was this when you were saying that you were checking the account?
Yes.
Can you tell that story? Because I should just explain that we're actually recording in my friend Gemma's house because a tradie started hammering on the wall of the house next door. And I said, oh crap, we're going to have to move this. So we're in my friend Gemma's house and you guys walked in and saw that Gemma has a melt, what do you call that?
I would call it an oil burner.
An oil burner, yeah.
Those that have been following our brand for a while, we just used to call it our egg oil burner.
Yes.
And it's the most beautiful minimal ceramic egg-shaped
piece.
It's
gorgeous.
You put the oils and the water in the top with a little tea light down the bottom. And we were just so excited to see it because that is literally a piece of our history. We haven't done them for years now.
It was like you'd seen a museum piece.
Yeah. I loved it. Absolutely loved it. But when we went to that trade fair, we had literally spent every last dollar that we had getting to the trade fair because obviously it's expensive to exhibit and we'd had to come up with creating our first samples of products.
Yes, and I can imagine you doing a trade fair, you're not going to have a trestle table, like it's going to be beautiful.
Absolutely, it was IKEA.
It will be done well.
It was gorgeous, big signage, you know, you have to look like you've already
made it. Yes, fake it till you make it.
And we were just literally so broke then that we packed peanut butter sandwiches to take with us. We didn't truck the stock down. We loaded it up in the car. I had to sit in the back of the car with things over my head all hunched over and the front seat down so that our IKEA could fit into the vehicle. But when we got to that trade fair, those egg oil burners were actually on the water. We'd designed them in Thailand.
Just to explain, for those on the water means that they're on a shipping container coming.
Yes, yeah. Exactly. And we'd paid for the actual products, but what we hadn't paid was the customs clearance once it arrives into Australia. And that's quite expensive because you're paying the duties, the taxes, the freight to come back up to the Blue Mountains. And it was an absolute exercise of trust because we had no money to clear that.
Holy crap.
And we just knew that we had to make a success of the trade fair. It was all or nothing. And so when our first orders started coming in, Paul was just reminding me that I used to pop out the back with a calculator and add them up and go, I think we've got enough now.
That is brilliant.
And it turned out we had more than enough. So that was fantastic. We actually got 80 stockers.
Holy crap. In that very first were they fair. Australian or
all Australian?
Field?
Yeah. Yeah. So this was the Gift and Homewares Fair. So we don't exhibit at those fairs anymore because now definitely skincare is more the portion of our brand. But back then it was more the simple things that could also gift.
Yeah.
So things like a beautiful hand cream, a herbal tea, a natural candle. And so it was mostly gift stores, but it was also some spas that found us.
Yeah.
And it was just crazy, you know, Lorraine, because we kept saying it was like this crazy manifestation thing where if we had a map of Australia, we could be putting dots on and we were getting all areas of Australia. It wasn't even any double ups.
I got goosebumps. Amazing.
It was just like the
literally
perfect
geographic
exercise.
Spread.
Yeah.
And how many months was that after you quit the jobs?
So we left our jobs in June.
Yeah.
And then that was in February.
February, okay.
Yeah.
Wow. So, and how did you feel? Because I guess there must be such validation in that day where
Huge.
You're like, oh, everything I've been beavering away at and pouring candles. In the kitchen.
Felt like a huge exercise in leaping off a mountain and trusting that you could fly.
Mm.
And until that moment, it felt like we were free falling. And then all of a sudden, it's like your wings just kick in.
Have you ever done a skydive?
Soar. I haven't.
It's that, of all the people, I've actually done a skydive because I had to do it as part of the entourage room. I did the 1 year with the entourage. We all did a skydive at the end. I seriously was freaking out for 6 months, but it is that feeling you're going so fast in free fall that you can't even think. And then all of a sudden the parachute goes up. And it's funny. That's when I started freaking out.
Oh, isn't that crazy?
Because you can't even think. You're going so fast in the first stage. And then the second bit, I was like, oh, I'm really high. That's such a good analogy. So at that point, did it feel like it was going to be okay?
Yeah. I knew then that we created a brand that was going to be successful. And for my love of branding, I think for me, that was the test of that. But in my mind, I had already created what I believe could become a global brand one day.
Yeah.
And Tick. Now has.
So, and when did the store come in then?
Not very long after. So that was in February.
And was that because the public were like, we need a store?
Yeah. So no, it was more that I felt that. And again, it was coming from a branding point of view. So we had picked up stockers that because we had so many product lines, we launched with like well over 100 products.
Holy
to start
crap.
With. Yeah. I don't do things in-house.
So when you mean that would be a candle, but it would be in six different scented blends. Yeah.
And maybe three different sizes.
Wow.
We had essential oils for the oil burner. We had the famous oil burners.
Yes.
Herbal teas, body scrubs, massage oils. And so not all of the businesses could take the entire range on, either for space or for what was appropriate for them. And so I found that we were actually splitting a lot of our product ranges up. And in fact, we had a chain that I've counted amongst the 80 as just one, but they actually had 50 outlets. And they weren't the best brand match for us. And I knew that right from the start, but it was a good exercise to test for them. They were wanting to pick up more of a female market in what was a more sort of sciencey kind of environment. And they wanted to just take on a small range for Mother's Day, just to test about nine products. And it was in a beautiful range, so it created a whole shelf of Iku. So it looked good from a range point of view. But I suddenly became aware as we were making all of this, and we had to work around the clock for 2 weeks just to make.
Paul's still in the kitchen?
Paul's out in the garage. I had the kitchen.
He got promoted to the garage. Okay.
So he used to make the candles out in the garage. I did the bath salts and the oils in the kitchen.
I love it.
I had to make a ton and a half of bath salts, all individually packaged. Paul had 2,000 candles. And I had, I think it was 1,500 massage oils.
Holy crap.
And we were cursing ourselves because we had never done barcodes on our labels and they needed barcodes. So afterwards we had to barcode every single one afterwards as well. So yeah, note to self, prepare for growth before it happens.
And it is such a good lesson, isn't it? It's doing things as if you're already the global business, like starting as you mean to go on.
Exactly.
Great lesson.
So we were getting all of that done. And the whole time, I obviously had a lot of time to think about where our brand was going out to. And I was incredibly proud of some of the day spas and hotels that we were going out to. Just prior to the trade fair, we had actually picked up our very first hotel client, which was Orient Express.
Nice.
So 5-star right from the start.
Yes. And you know, it must be such a thing where you get that first one and that then... It's like attracts like.
Exactly. Yeah. And I knew that.
That's so
powerful.
And I
knew that we had a strong case to get into them because they were in the Blue Mountains. So I could go to them and say, you need locally made products. We can provide you with locally made. Once we got into that location.
But high quality.
Exactly.
Not, you know, yes. No offense, but the little market stall.
Exactly.
Handmade soaps with, yeah.
Correct.
Love. You were just there.
And then they had a second hotel at that stage. They had the Observatory in Sydney, which was also owned by Orient Express. So once we got one, we got two. And you're right. It just becomes then like a flower that attracts the bees. But as we were making the products for all of these orders, I just kept saying, we need a shop. We really need a shop, because I felt like I was splitting up the families, and I felt like what people were seeing of Iku out in the marketplace wasn't the lifestyle. They were seeing it as products.
Yeah.
And we're not just products. We're about connecting with the way that you feel through creating rituals with various products, you know, like light a candle, run a beautiful bath, but do it with intention towards either de-stressing, bringing energy, heart healing. There's many different needs, and you can only do that when you can connect with the range. And so at that stage, we decided it was time for a store, and the money that had come in from our first orders would certainly help us to do a shop fit. And we were quite savvy with our IKEA fit outs back then.
Yes.
We're also quite handy. So we'd renovated houses ourselves. So, you know, we knew how to paint. Paul can gyprock. He's very good on the tools to fix up a building. But we knew that we wanted to be in Lura in the Blue Mountains because it's just the perfect shopping destination. It attracts so many people coming up from Sydney for the cafes and for shopping.
The chocolate shop. Always the chocolate shop for
it's
me.
It's so good, isn't it?
Josephine's. I never say it properly. Josephine's, yes.
All made in the mountains as well.
Yes, divine.
So. And I think that's what I love about Lura. It's not a shopping center that's made up of all the chains that you see everywhere else that you go. It's a lot of local businesses that are very passionate about the high quality of what they produce. But stores never become available there. It's so difficult to get a space. And in fact, key money is rife. So normally to get a space, you need quite a lot of money to actually
purchase
the key. I don't know if you've heard of
this. No, fill me in.
I believe it's not common practice and perhaps not even legal. I'm not sure. But shop owners actually, when they want to pass on the lease, so they don't own the building, just their lease, they will sell you the privilege of getting the key off them. So our first shop that we moved from didn't have key money. It was in an upstairs location. But when we moved downstairs, we actually had to buy the children's clothing store, the business name, even though we weren't going to be running their business, we had to buy that just to get the privilege of a 4-year lease from them.
My God.
That's how prime real estate that it is. And people stay for years and years because of that. So it makes it quite stable.
Yeah.
And it is because it's such a successful place. But it was amazing, the timing. I think we're just always ever hopeful that even when things don't seem possible, that we go, there must be a way, or it will never happen if we don't try or we don't seek an opportunity. And so we went down and just went for a walk around Lura, and we're sitting on a bench just looking around the town. I don't even know what we thought we were looking for. And then we looked up from the bench, and in the second level above a bookstore and a furniture store, there were four big floor-to-ceiling windows. You could see the space was huge. It took up two buildings down below. And there was a police sign up in the window. Not an ideal location because it's upstairs.
Yes.
And it was 100 square meters, so it's a big space to fill out. But we just saw it immediately for what it could be. It was in such bad repair. Mm. It had had a previous tenant in there for over 10 years, and it was just all different mishmash of bright blue and yellow and red, and tin ceiling had rusted, and it was just, you know, very, very neglected. But we took over the lease, renovated it, worked day and night for a couple of weeks, and got it open in June, the long weekend in June.
Wow, perfect.
And finally, IKU was showcased as a complete brand, not split up, including the level of service that you described, where you come into our store, you're served a tea, you can smell the diffuser wafting the essential oils through. We have fresh, real plants growing in the environment, and it's a very caring, very genuine environment that you come into. So thus the retail division was born.
Amazing. And then the spa came.
Yes. So then 4 months after that, things moved so quickly. Four months after that was when the children's clothing store became available downstairs. And it was only a couple of doors away. Literally walked down the stairs a couple of doors away. And I'll never forget, Paul came running up the stairs one day. And he said, you've got to come and look at the shop. You've got to come and look at the shop. And I knew about key money, and it was $80,000.
And when you said key money, I was like, it's probably a couple of thousand dollars, 80 grand.
80 grand. And this was in the
GFC. But you still got to find the money to, like, prepay your rent. And
absolutely.
Bond. Whoa, man. So it's almost like stamp duty when you're buying a house.
Exactly.
Like,
and you don't get it
back. What is this even for?
Unless you sell the key at the end.
Jesus.
And at this stage, we were running debt-free. So we were self-funding just from the money that had come in, but it was all very humble and you're very frugal as well.
Yeah.
And when Paul said it, I nearly passed out. He's definitely the brave one for those leaps of faith. I was like, I think we should think about it. He said, it will be gone. We just need to decide now. And Karen, who was our very first staff member right from the start in the kitchen, she used to work with us in the previous role as well. She'd retired. And when I needed a first staff member, I actually called her and said, get out of the veggie patch. We haven't finished working yet. We've got more projects to do. So she'd started with us. And I remember her just almost pushing me down the stairs saying, just go, go. And everything just felt like it happened so fast. Whoa. So we went down, we looked at this store, and I knew in my heart it was definitely the right move. If we didn't take that leap of faith, we would have stayed that small business, not having a huge traffic flow, always in the upstairs, not such a great location. And so we approached the bank for the first time to get a loan and took over the children's clothing store.
Were they happy to loan to you? Because the business was less than two years old.
Well, when we first needed a loan was actually back from that trade fair when we had the 80 customers come on board. Yeah. We didn't have enough money to get all the raw materials to make the products. Our bank manager very kindly helped us to max out our credit cards.
Okay.
And then when we needed the $80,000 for the taking over of the store, they allowed us to extend our house loan. We had some equity in our house by then, which was really lucky because this was during the GFC as well.
Yeah.
So they weren't lending. It was just lucky that we'd bought our own house and that we'd built up some collateral around that. And I think, I can't remember how much that we had to get. It was just like a small loan. By then we did have a good chunk of it ourselves, but of course it's using up all your resources. So it's actually going straight into that. And then what it meant was we still had this gorgeous space upstairs, and we'd renovated it, and it was beautiful. It was absolutely beautiful by the time we'd finished with it. The light would stream in, it looked down to the cherry trees in the Lura Mall. And the natural progression was to turn it into IKU Day Spa.
Which I got to go to once.
Did you?
And then I called. to make an appointment to get myself away. I spend a lot of time in the mountains, and they're like, no, it's closed. I was like, no.
It was such a great, we had the spa for, it would have been about 3 years. It was such a great testing ground to be able to develop our professional ranges of products for the day spas to use.
Mm.
Because straight away, I wasn't just creating products and saying to these spas, use them, they're fantastic. I also understood their pain points. I
yes.
knew about treatment flows and costings per treatment and the common things that came up with therapists. And so because we had our own spa, it really gave us credibility.
That's such a good point. And I actually remember judging a business awards a few years ago, and it was Creative Agency of the Year. So there's a lot of very, very high profile creative agencies came in for it's not an interview. Yeah, it's like they come in and like present their business to the panel of judges. And I remember one of them had this idea that they brought over this ice cream brand from the States. And their whole point was that because so many of their clients were stocked at Coles and Woolworths and the big Aussie supermarkets, that they wanted to understand their clients' challenges.
Mm.
So they actually became, not manufacturers, but they became the owners of this ice cream brand in Australia. And it always registered with me as such a great way to, exactly like you've just said, just to understand your customer and what their challenges are. And yeah, like to get that credibility piece. And also, I mean, I would imagine from day one, when you're designing a product, it's not saying, oh, this will feel really beautiful for the client who's having this amazing massage. You're actually also thinking about, how's this going to work commercially?
Yeah.
How the therapist's going to find it? Yeah, that's really cool.
Menu development. So to this day, I still do the menu development for all of the spas that we work with.
Okay.
Because we only go high end. We only allow the high end spas to use our name on their menu. We do supply bulk product to some places, but to have an Iku treatment, you have to have been trained by us and have the menu developed by myself. And so that really also helped, because then they could see that I was basing it on my own research.
Yeah.
So for example, I knew that treatment upgrades on a menu really work, because the person on front reception, they don't have to think about what flows in a treatment that they can add on that actually will work. And for the guest, it also plants the idea to go, actually, if you want to add this, it would go perfectly with that.
So it'd be like I'm getting a facial, and yes. I would get like a foot massage.
Correct.
So that's what you mean by that, almost like the upsell.
Absolutely.
Yeah, brilliant.
Yeah. So I think having the spa really helped with that. It also meant if spas were interested in taking on Iku, became our showroom.
Yeah, yeah.
That they could come and enjoy a treatment. There's no better way than to actually come and experience it yourself. But the fact that we could run our own spa financially just on Iku retail sales and treatments was also testimony to the brand that it was commercially successful.
Yeah.
So it gives a lot of credibility.
That's gold. So then after that, so then at this point, so where are we at now? So you'd started the business, and then you're at a point now where you've moved down to the, so you've got your store now on the,
yes,
the main strip.
Yes.
And you've got the spa upstairs. Yes. How far down the journey are we then since the business started?
So we would be, gosh, it all happened so quickly that I even think that I get the years mixed up. So yeah. 2008 was when we launched the store, and then the spa would have opened 2009.
A year later. So you, yeah. Oh, wow. Okay. And then you opened a Sydney store. Is that the next
same
big
time.
Step? The same time
as
doing the spa.
Literally within months of each other. And that came about because we had so many people coming up from Sydney, like yourself, that loved the Blue Mountains.
Yeah.
And they used to say, when are you opening in Sydney? We had online, but they loved coming into the store. It just made them feel so good.
Mm.
And they could, you know, test things, and they were still getting used to the ranges. And so opening the sister store in Paddington in Sydney was such a great natural progression for those people.
My God.
But yeah, very quick.
So much work. I guess the good thing about opening the second store is that you had so much practice and you knew what worked and what didn't.
Correct.
And it was like you were starting from scratch. So if I was to ask you, what were the three key things you think, because I feel like sitting where I'm sitting talking to you, I feel like I could probably say, yeah, these are the three things that I think you did really well. In your own words, what are the three things that those key decisions that you guys made, particularly in those kind of first 5 years? So how old is the business now then? It must be 12 years
12
old,
years.
Am I right? Yeah.
Yes.
So what are the, let's say in that first 5 years, what are the three key decisions you think you made to get where you are now?
The way that we created the brand. Mm. So we created it to be a brand, not just a product.
Yeah.
And then the way that we enforce that to make sure that the brand stayed really pure.
I love the word you've enforced. It was literally like, but that's the thing, isn't it? You have to be the brand guardian of your own brand, and you were the police.
Absolutely.
You policed your brand.
Absolutely.
You protected it. Yeah.
I think knowing who our customers were and also knowing who they weren't, like we didn't go after the entire market.
Yeah.
We were very niche and specific around what would feed our soul to keep working with, that would give us longevity to keep loving what we're doing, and also to mean that we could create things that would work for those people, whether it was the stockists and spa partners or the customers that were buying the products at the end. And then I think also splitting to not just stay as a wholesale brand, but to go retail was huge for us. That was very life-changing. And to this day, it doesn't matter if one area of the business goes a bit quieter than the other. There's always something to keep it all going. It tends to sort of ebb and flow like that, actually, that it's quite perfect to keep up with
as well. Could you, I mean, only if you're happy to share, can you share like what's the percentage split generally? Like, is it 50-50 retail, wholesale? Amazing.
So our retail stores are very successful when you think of the fact that we've only got three retail
And you say
stores
online, I mean, your online experience is beautiful
and
as
online,
well.
Online, I count separately again. And online is doing phenomenal. So Paul and I have taken that on as our project in the last year.
Yeah.
And currently it's been averaging between 50% to 100% increase every single month. It's been amazing.
Sorry, pick me off the floor. I thought you were going to say every year. Every month.
And we've put a lot of energy into that. So we have a really good mailing list. Our mailing list is gold. That's where like social media and all of that.
I need to get on your list actually.
Fantastic.
But I would have been on it in the past. Yeah. But when I sell my first business.
Yes.
You know, you kind of like unsubscribe from everything.
It's true.
What do you see would be the three biggest mistakes that you made? And when we say mistakes, obviously it's learnings and it's opportunities to improve and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, absolutely.
In its bluntest form, that's called the mistakes.
Do you know, it's funny, I was talking with Paul about this at the weekend because I knew that you were going to ask that question, and I wasn't sure if I was
I'm just glad I got to that question because we've been talking for so long.
But honestly, I don't feel like we've made any mistakes. I agree about lessons, but I think what the biggest thing has been for us, I naturally think risk mitigation. And I know sometimes people see that as being negative, but actually I would much prefer to think about what could go wrong instead of just trusting that everything will go right. I would much prefer to do that before things happen. And then I'm prepared for them if they do.
Yeah. And you know, that was going to be one of my questions. Like, there's these leaps of faith. And I think it's all well and good for us to sit here interviewing, chatting today and saying, yeah, take the leap of faith. But I'm sure there must have been some kind of, if it doesn't work out, this is what we're going to do. Like,
yeah, I guess.
Was there?
The biggest trust was the one with the customs clearance. So trusting that the money would come in.
Almost tasting the peanut butter sandwiches when you're telling that story.
But yeah, honestly, there's been nothing. I mean, to me, a mistake is something that you're lying awake at night going, I shouldn't have done that. It's like a regret. And anything has just been small lessons, like, I guess, you know, we should have put the barcodes on the product in the first week so that we didn't have an extra 24 hours of barcoding of products. But I really feel that, and perhaps it is because there's two of us, that we get to bounce those ideas. And actually, even Karen, who's been with us right since the start, she thinks naturally like that too. So we always sort of bounce these things and brainstorm. And I've even heard sometimes other staff hear us when we're first talking about a new system that we're setting up. And we naturally, particularly Karen and I love brainstorming with this woman. She's incredible. We naturally fall into, but what about this? But what about that? And I've heard other staff that haven't maybe worked with us as long going, what are you two talking about? That won't happen. But I just love that we think like that to go, if that did happen, how would we prevent that from happening? How would we deal with it? Is it big enough to have to mitigate the risk before it happens? Or is it okay that if it does, we're just prepared? So because of that, I guess we have also been lucky with some of the gambles that we've made, you know, like moving the store. They've been big, bold decisions, or holding back on people, not being able to take the range unless they took the minimums. But yeah, I guess that comes down to a lot of trust, but foresight as well. Like, I like to already see things before they happen.
Because I can almost see it like you're using two sides of the brain. Like, the one side's like, yeah, it's all going to be fine. It's going to be amazing. Like the optimist. And then the other side is the realist that knows what you can do if it doesn't all pan out as planned.
Yes.
So then really you're just quite centered.
Yeah, I think so.
You're not like operating from a place of wild optimism or wild pessimism. You're just centered.
And I think it helped because I'd run other people's businesses before. I also learned a lot from the things that they did.
That's true.
To go, I don't ever want to repeat this again.
It's funny how much of you learned is not necessarily how you would do it, but how you would not do
it. Definitely. And particularly around managing money and people. I think that was where I, you know, really picked up a lot. And I love reading business books as well.
Yes.
I'm a bit of a business nerd. So
what's been your favorite business book so far?
Oh, I have so many, but I think the one that was possibly the most life-changing to me was Good to Great.
Yes, I love that one. I saw Jim Collins speak a few years ago. He was really, really great.
Oh, my favorite bit is about getting the right people on the bus.
Yes.
And the wrong people off the bus and the right people in the right seats.
And then the fine seats later. I talked about that so much.
Quite groundbreaking for me. Yeah.
Now, still got a lot of questions to go, Naomi, just flagging. So I'm really keen to talk about your – well, actually, can we talk about Paul first? Because we've talked about the man a lot. And it sounds to me, I mean, for some people, I mean, I wonder if myself and Wade could work together. No. So, you know, for a lot of people, working with their partner would be an absolute nightmare. Mm. And I know I've mentored some people who work with their partners and, you know, it's not without intense challenges. Why does it work so well between you guys? And I've been, you know, lucky enough to see your dynamic firsthand this morning, and it's just easy. It's just easy.
Not
you
always,
know?
But...
And you wait for each other to finish speaking. And, you know, it just sounds very... The vibe I got from you guys is incredibly respectful and so loving towards each other.
It's really lovely.
So what are you guys doing?
I think we're both heading to the same goals. Mm. And it's not always without, I guess, without passion as well. So sometimes we can get quite impassioned if we're both, you know, feeling strongly about something. Often for me, it will be because I'm quite driven and I really like things to be done, like taking in the big picture and maximizing and doing more. I was saying to you, coming down to Sydney to interview with you today, it's in my nature to go, well, I've driven from the mountains, I'll do another 6 appointments while I'm here. Whereas for Paul, he likes to have a good balanced life.
Mm.
And so he'll be the one then that's reminding me, you know, that's too stressful a day. Let's ease back.
And you're hosting your first retreat this weekend. So it's funny. He's almost looking ahead, helping you manage your energy.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. And I think that's where we really balance each other. But we both come from a place of just wanting to be in this for the long term together. I feel so blessed that we met when I was so young. And I just feel so grateful to have a partner in my life that not only do I love and get to live with, but also to work with every day and to create things together that is a joint passion that we both get our needs fulfilled, but we both get so much satisfaction and joy out of what we're doing as well.
Yeah.
But I think if we both had the same skill set, that's where it would be just terrible. It would be so difficult. Our skill set is so different, so we complement each other. We actually need each other to complete things.
Well, you kind of talked about the jigsaw puzzle. I don't even know if that was when we were recording or not.
I don't think it was. No, I've always said that we're like jigsaw pieces in the business, that both of us have completely different skill sets. So I'm more the front face, Paul's behind the scenes. I've tried to get him involved sometimes in interviews. When we won the Telstra Regional Business of the Year Award, they wanted to interview him, and he was like, I don't do this. And I went, you'll be fine. You're on such a high. We've just won. And they started filming and he just looked at the camera and just went, I can't do it.
No. That's so good.
And so, you know, that's fine because now I've sort of come to a place of going, well, I can't work a computer very well. Mm. I can sketch out what I want. And then he turns that into something. So even my blog that goes up each week at the moment, or our mail outs, I'm the one that writes the wording and then he's the one that actually puts that into the format for the computer. Wow. And it just doesn't interest me and I really, you know, don't like that side of things, but he loves it. He absolutely loves it. So our skills just completely balance each other.
Now I want to talk to you about awards there's so much I want to talk to you about, but I want to talk to you about awards because you won the Telstra. So you tell me what you won. I know you won 2 Telstra awards.
Yes. So as a business, we won the New South Wales and the National Regional Business of the Year Award.
Yes.
That was in 2013. So that was as a business.
Yes.
And then in 2015, I won the Telstra Business Women's Award.
Yes.
In New South Wales for Entrepreneur of the Year.
Amazing. I think I was following the brand around then and I was aware of your Business Women's Award. How did winning an award change your business? Winning awards.
I think it just gives so much credibility.
Yeah.
I think people feel, whether it's in employees or it's people that are wanting to do trade with you, it's almost like a wax seal of approval to say, I don't have to check you out because you've already been
vetted almost. Yeah, I never thought about that.
Exactly.
Yeah.
There was certainly a lot of pride amongst all the women in our business. And we mostly are a female business. Yeah. I think besides Paul, I think we actually only have two males that work for us.
And how many employees do you have?
We have 35.
35. And then obviously you've got your distributors.
Correct.
All around the world as well.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. So I think for the women, I've always said as I grow, like for me, that girl that left school at 15, that's never worked in a business as big as ours, let alone run a business of this size. I've always said as I grow, the women around me grow as well, because a lot of them have been the same. Like we're still in a regional environment. So we haven't attracted people that have been business trained. It's been people that have really learnt on the job and grown in their roles. And I've really seen a lot of growth with the leaders within our business, the women that are leading our teams, that as I grow, that I see them get empowered to grow as well. And it was such an, when I entered, it wasn't just for me, but it was also for them that I entered to represent all of us, because of course it's not just me anymore.
Yes.
I could not do this without all of them.
Yeah. And did you notice a big commercial difference in the business after
more
the awards?
From a marketing level.
Okay.
Yeah. So, I mean, again, possibly we could have leveraged it more, but I've been so busy keeping up with all of it. The growth has just been so organic. I never feel like we have to go chase business, to be honest. If we did, whoa, would it possibly go even more crazy?
Yeah.
But definitely from a marketing point of view, we had a lot more interviews and media exposure, which was really fantastic. Great for my skills as well.
Yeah, and your confidence.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah.
I think there's something really powerful about being forced to talk about your business.
Yes.
Like it really gets you very, very, because it can all be going on in your head, but you have to get very articulate when you start to present your business to someone on an awards level.
Mm.
You've got to be so succinct and there's no fluff there. And you have to be so impassioned as well.
Mm.
Now, I'm like, pillars. Next pillar, I want to talk to you about your health, because you've experienced some health challenges that would fail lesser mortals. And also experienced the loss of your mom at really pivotal times in the business as well. Can you talk, and you know, when you're talking about this business, it's so reliant on your energy. You know, it's you. And I know it's Paul as well, but it's you were the kind of the conceiver of this business. Mm. And you've now, it's like a child, you know, you've brought it out into the world and nurtured it to get it to the point that it's at now. So that's, in you know, my experience, particularly last year, it's extraordinarily hard to do the business when, on a personal level, you're really struggling. So would you mind sharing, I know you wrote a bit about it so beautifully in your book, which I was reading the other day. Can you share a bit about, well, first of all, what those challenges were and how the hell you managed to run the business while experiencing those challenges as well?
Yeah, you just never know what life holds.
Mm.
And it's interesting because I've often observed that the more successful that a business becomes, the more unsuccessful you can become in your own life.
Yes.
Because you just give so much to it and you feel this responsibility too as well, that you just give and give and give.
Mm.
And I guess for me, when these challenges came up, I was very lucky. It was the best time ever because I just started delegating so much more and realizing that I needed to. It was almost like life was preparing me for what was about to happen. And this was in, I think it was 2015. It's funny I lose track of the years, but I just lost my mum. So when we talk about the Telstra Business Women's Awards, I had literally just lost my mum just a few months prior. And one of the driving forces of me entering the awards was to honour her because it was a women's award. And so when I was nominated, oftentimes I would look at these things and just go, it's just too much.
Yeah.
The process, you know, it's days answering questions and applications. It's like a full-time job for that week. And we were preparing for a trade fair and I looked at it going, am I in or am I out? And what drove me to be in was losing my mom.
Mm.
And I think I wanted to keep, you know, really extra busy so that I wasn't
dwelling
on that. But I thought, wouldn't it be cool if I could win that and just, you know, honor the skills that my mom and my dad had taught me that had helped for me to be successful in the longevity of building my own brand. So I entered the awards and I just found out that I was a finalist. We were down at that trade fair, found out the good news, came back, and that weekend I was out on a 100-kilometer bike ride with some friends, and it was just such a beautiful day to be out. The weather was actually the first time that we'd seen sun all of the winter in the mountains. It just felt like it had been so dark and cloudy. And because I'd been indoors at the trade fair, it felt so good to be outdoors. Mm. And I remember my last thoughts as I was riding down this road. We're all quite spread out. It was quite a steep descent, like quite a windy back road. We decided to take the back road so we weren't on the highway because we were leaving a little bit later. And I remember my last thoughts were, I'm so lucky to be out on this beautiful day, because the dappled shadows on the road, they were big circles of black and white. And they just reminded me of one of Paul's artworks, because he loves capturing light. And I thought, I'm so lucky to be out in the fresh air doing something that's fueling my health. And it's just so beautiful out here with the sun. And then all of a sudden I realized that one of the black circles was a giant pothole. And it was a meter long by half a meter wide and 10 centimeters deep.
10 centimeters deep.
There was no avoiding it. As soon as I saw it, I was already on it. And again, the eternal optimist, my glass is always half full. Mm. I remember thinking, at least you're going through the center of it and not the side of it, because I thought the side is more likely to tip you. And I'd done a little bit of mountain biking with Paul before, so I was quite used to that sort of, you know, rugged terrain. But this time I'm on a road bike with skinny little wheels doing 60 kilometers down a hill. So I hit it, and then I went flying through the air, landed on my head and kept rolling about 20 meters. So my helmet, when you see it, it looks like a shark attack, because the road was really chunky gravel. And the helmet was completely just smashed up on both sides with big chunks, looked like big teeth marks out of both sides.
Can you imagine if you weren't wearing it? Oh my God.
Anyone that doesn't wear a helmet is just insane. It definitely saved my life. And Paul was just a few meters behind me, but he didn't see the hole. And there were another 10 guys that had already gone through that nobody saw this hole. It just looked like a shadow.
They had gone around it.
But they didn't realize.
Yeah. So you were just meant to fall in that pothole.
And so when I came to on the road, Paul was stopping to assist me. And then all of a sudden we heard crashing behind us. And two of our other friends actually hit the hole, and one of them, he wasn't so lucky. His bike actually exploded from the impact, and the handlebars that held to the bike, they actually ripped apart. And so instead of rolling like I did, he actually impacted straight into his face on the ground. And I just remember waking up. I couldn't move. I could barely breathe from the pain. I had a broken collarbone. It was a bad break as well. And I just remember hearing them screaming, saying that he wasn't breathing, and they were trying to get the emergency services to find out where we were. And because it was a back road, the phone kept dropping out and trying to describe the road. And so it was
a sense of panic. Yeah.
Oh, I think because of that, it impacted on my psyche so much more. Mm. And he had a little girl as well, and I don't have kids.
So he passed away?
No, he has a brain injury. He was so lucky to live, and he has the most incredible wife that's been helping with his rehabilitation. But he was in a coma for quite a few months, and just, you know, seeing that life can change in that moment.
Yeah.
That, you know, it's not, I think it's been quite profound for me, in that it's actually made me just think so much more about what I say yes to now.
Mm.
Because you never know, this could be your last day or the last day of somebody that you love. And would you really want to spend that working on a project that you don't love?
God, that is powerful. Yeah.
It was absolutely huge. They couldn't operate on me for about 10 days because I was so ripped up.
And I couldn't believe that when you wrote about this in the book, and you were sent home with a broken collarbone. Like, oh my gosh.
It was pretty full on. They said the risk of
heavy pain medication, I'd assume.
Very heavy. Yeah. And the first time that we tried a shower, it's funny because Paul at the hospital, always making light as he does, he said, cool, I get to be on shower duty.
Oh, God.
He was like,
you know what? Wade would do that too.
He was like, this is every man's fantasy. I get to bathe my wife. And he thought, this is so fantastic.
Sweetheart.
But the reality of that was not the same.
It wasn't quite as sexy.
My gown was quite stuck to me because they couldn't plaster everything up. Like, I was so ripped up that, and I wouldn't let them take the gown off me when I came home, as I was just too scared to even move. I was in so much pain. Even when they were doing the morphine in the helicopter, I had to get helicoptered to Sydney because I thought
The two of you in the helicopter?
There was one other, and then our friend that was the worst, he got sent to a different hospital because they knew it was
brain. On a helicopter as well. Yeah.
Yeah, brain injury. And the sad thing was, my mum, who lived just a little bit further out west to us, a couple of hours beyond in Orange, she had been taken by helicopter to hospital.
Mm.
And I think it just brought it all back. I was in the helicopter going, I wonder if this is the one that mom got taken.
God.
To in Sydney. Yeah. It was just such a crazy time. Like you suddenly realize that life isn't forever for yourself or for all the others around you.
And you know, you hear of these stories happening to other people, but it must be only when it becomes so localized to you that the penny drops finally.
Yeah, definitely. Every time I hear a siren to this day, I touch the walls of the house and just feel so grateful to be alive and so grateful for Paul. He was the most incredible nurse. And like I couldn't get myself out of bed to get to the toilet without his help. Or when we did the first shower, we had to soak my robe off because it had stuck to me in so many places. And I think just the fear of it, I actually passed out and stopped breathing. And when I woke up, he's hitting my chest. Just remember waking up going, why are you hitting me? And then he just was leaning back against the wall, like just panicked breathing, just going, oh my God, oh my God.
I've killed her. My sexy shower killed her.
So all of this had been happening and then I had my surgery, and had the most amazing surgeon. He was incredible. But after the surgery, I got really deep brain fog, worse actually than after the accident. And I don't know if it was going under anesthesia after being being knocked out. I don't know if like having concussion and then that does something.
Or all of it catching up with you, like the
maybe
trauma.
Yeah. It could have been, because when I came out of the surgery, I was on such a high. I remember being so happy. I think I was so relieved that it was over. Yeah. And I even started writing a chapter for my book.
Of course you did. Maximizing.
Because I started writing that book quite a few years ago.
Yeah.
And you're maximizing, absolutely. Then the pain meds must have worn off, or the, you know, anesthetic had worn off, and then it hit. And then survivor guilt hit hugely for me. I did not expect for me to be a person that would ever feel that. But all I could think of was my friend, who at that stage was still in a coma, and his little girl that loved her daddy so much, and his wife, and just kept thinking, why am I okay? Why am I here? Why is my mum not? And because she definitely, we lost her before her time. And why is my friend like this? And I really felt so guilty. They actually brought a psychologist in to come and talk with me in the hospital, which was very, very lovely of them. And I think there was a lot sort of going on then, but I found I couldn't even concentrate on reading an email. Like if somebody didn't do bullet points, and it's always been a pet hate of mine when people send these big long
chunks. Oh, same. I'm like, just tell me what the fuck you want me to do. Just tell me what you want me to do and I'll do it. Yes.
But this was worse than ever, because I actually just couldn't read it.
Yeah.
And I remember having to ask Paul to help read some things, and he just kept saying, you've got to get off the computer. You just have to not be on the computer. And I remember even times where I was stuck in bed and couldn't get up, and I would say to him, babe, could you please bring my phone or my iPad? And he'd go, no, but I can put some yoga music on for you. And he really helped me to make sure that I rested my brain, because I just couldn't function.
It just sounds like we were just over-calibrated. There was just too much.
I think so.
In such a short amount of time.
I'd forget where the car was parked if we went to a medical appointment and he wasn't with me. I went to a bathroom out the back of a cafe one day and couldn't find my way back out the laneway. It was pretty,
my gosh, terrifying. Particularly as someone who's so self-sufficient and, you know, you pride yourself in your, no, I'm not saying you pride yourself, but I know if you're running a business to the level that you are, like there must be some level of assurance that you have around your own intelligence.
Yeah,
and then
definitely.
If you can't even find your car.
Definitely.
That'd be really confronting.
So this is how I went.
So how long did that go on for?
That would have been a good 2 months that lasted.
And you're still running the business, or has Paul stepped in to grip up more?
No, so Paul was very much caring for me and still doing his regular part of the role. The only parts of the business that stopped was the marketing side of things.
Okay.
The rest was the team, and it was just such great timing that I'd already handed on. So prior to that, I was still working in our lab making product.
Yes, yeah.
But not exclusively. So my team also knew how to make products. So it was more that we all shared the role. So straight away, they could just keep it going.
Keep going, yeah.
The wholesale had its own manager and great team there that I only got involved with the new big deals that were coming in.
Brilliant.
So they didn't even notice that I was gone. Our retail teams, we have awesome managers. So again, it was just more the driving the business forward, but we could certainly keep things functioning, which was absolutely fantastic. And all of this when I had to be judged for the Telstra Business Women's Awards.
So what happened then? So you were very unwell, it sounds like, for 2 months, and then the judging happened after
The judging happened just after I got out of hospital.
Shit.
I know. And I asked, could we delay it? I said, I'm
That's
literally
pretty good
just
reason.
Out of hospital. I can't even think. And they said, no, this is it. And so I had to decide, do I make the effort? The judging was in Sydney as well.
And so you had to travel.
2 hours away in the Blue Mountains. So even to go in the car was, you know, quite unsettling.
Bumpy, yeah.
Because you're just so fearful of getting jolted. Mm. By then I had a plate in my collarbone, but still I was very bruised and battered and still had grazing on my face and not feeling at all at my sharpest. And I remember the first question when I walked in for judging, and it was a male and female judge. And the male judge was the first one to start. And I could never have predicted his question. And his question was, what scares you the most right now?
Oh, God. And knowing what had just happened to you?
No, he didn't know. And so he meant in business. But, of course, my brain went to life. And I was like, I just felt like screaming out and going, what scares me the most is that everybody around me is going to die. And that I'm going to die. And that life is just so fragile. And yeah, but instead something clicked in. The business mode was still there.
Yeah, muscle memory.
Obviously did okay because I won.
And that was the national, that was the business women's one. Yeah.
So that was the Entrepreneur of the Year in New South Wales in the Telstra Business Women's Awards.
Wow. Oh my God.
So it actually was pretty cool timing to have something so lovely happen.
Yeah.
Straight after such horrible things to just, yeah, have a moment to celebrate and to feel like life does go on and you can still keep growing and creating and learning from it. And also
reminding that you're on the right track.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And how grateful I was to my team because the business wouldn't have been able to go if I hadn't had all of those amazing people.
I feel like I want to go back and look at the photos of you winning that night again just to actually get the full story behind the smile.
And actually when you replay it and they call out my name, the shock on my face, you can see shock stayed with me because my jaw just didn't close for quite a while. And I think it's just because it was like one shock after another another. It was, and then when I got up onto the stage to do my speech, which has never been my favorite thing to do as well, like there's another shock.
That's incredible. Oh, wow. So what did that, because I think you're like me, you look back to see what the learning, what the benefit of an experience was. How did that benefit you and specifically how did it benefit the business, the health issues that you, I mean, it's not health issues, they're terrifying.
Yeah, well, actually they did become health issues later on because I ended up having to have 4 surgeries. Mm. It wasn't over after that one. And I got quite deep fatigue after the last one. And again, it just felt like that whole brain fog thing came back. And that was over a period of 2 years.
Mm.
So it really taught me the importance of building up a team around you.
Yes.
As early as you can. And not feeling like you always have to be the one to do everything, even though sometimes you might do it faster or in your opinion better than other people. If you aren't there and it relies on you, it can't keep going. So I've really learnt, and even before this actually, I'm grateful that I'd already been exploring that, to allow people to grow in their roles and not expect them to be you, not expect them to be the business owner with the same level of experience. Mm-hmm. Like I'm older than most of them as well. Mm. So of course I will have more experience. Plus I've built it from the ground up.
Yeah.
So actually just factor in that when you're outsourcing yourself to other people, factor in extra time for them to do that. So you're not resenting the wages that it's costing, just going, okay, if I can do it in this long, then I'll allow them, you know, time and a half of that, and that'll be okay because I've already financially factored that in.
It's a great idea.
Or they'll never get great at it if you don't let them have practice.
Yeah, that's so good. You're such an interesting person in terms of, like, obviously you're interesting, but there's almost like a base, contradiction, because you're so hands-on with the brand. Like the brand is like, it's your baby and you're nurturing it so hard and protecting it. However, with the business, and it's not to say you don't give a shit about it, but you've obviously put really great people in place that you can be here with me. I know you're hosting your very first retreat this weekend, which I'm like, I'm hosting a retreat this weekend. I was like, I want to go on your retreat. That sounds amazing. So, I mean, IQ products, like I'm sold. So, and you've obviously written your book, which, I mean, it's such a comprehensive book and it's beautiful. I know how much work that must have been to create that. So you've obviously got amazing, and you could go and have your back injury and.
Yeah.
Do you say back injury for your collarbone? Is that the right word?
I'm not sure.
Back injury. Well, your injury. Either way, it was an injury. So you've obviously got a really, really strong team that you can just trust to get shit done. In terms of the bombs you've put on seats, and it's not to say that it's dependent on the individual people, who are the 3 most key hires that you made? Not in terms of names, but the roles. Because you and Paul were wearing all the hats and you had Karen.
Yes.
Yeah. What were the key things that you started that, looking back now over the last 12 years? 12 years, yes.
Yes.
Who were the three key people that you hired that you can go, oh, they were a step change? Does that make sense?
It does.
Because we can hire someone who's an absolute gun and is amazing, but we can hire someone else, and it's just where they're sitting on the bus, you know, to quote Jim Collins,
yes,
that they just change your world.
Yes.
And I know for me, I hired my first business, Sarah, my GM, and she changed my world within a week. So who were those three for you?
For me, it's been...
Because you've scaled so well.
It's been the leaders of the people. So okay. For me... It's funny, quite a few years ago, I did Tony Robbins' Business Mastery.
Oh, I'm so jealous. I did Unleash the Power Within. I've actually got Date with Destiny would be my like.
Okay.
That and Business Mastery.
Yes, I did Business Mastery. And actually, that was just after I'd had the accident. And I think it was because I was really realizing I need to work out what my role is in the company because I'm capable of being all these things.
Yeah, and that's to be the thing, isn't it? Things. When you can do all the jobs as well, it's like, well, why would I hand it over?
But I could also feel, and I've had this come up at many times in my role, where I just feel almost like resentful to go, well, who am I without my work? Because I have to be all these things all the time.
It's a sense of significance. Yeah.
Yeah. And so for me, I wanted to actually work out, well, who am I to know then who I need to outsource, which parts of my role I really need to outsource. And it wasn't until I did that, that the answer really became clear, because they got us to analyze whether or not we were the artist in the business, the creative, whether or not we were the manager leader, or if we were the entrepreneur. And of course, I'm all three. So when they first started talking about this, I thought, this is really interesting. What am I going to be? And then when they just started describing what each person was, the entrepreneur was happy just to cash out as soon as the money came in. And it was just about the next money deal. And I thought, I'm very savvy with money and I've made our business financially successful, but I'm invested in it. I'm not that person. Then when they talked about the manager leader, and I like to think of myself as quite an inspiring leader with our teams. And when they described what the manager leader was, I was like, oh no, that's not me. They talked about patiently mentoring when people need to be told again and again and again.
Yeah.
And to modify systems for people.
I have such respect for people who can do that.
Me too. Yeah. And straight away, you know, I saw the vision that came into my face was the woman who she's our regional manager of our retail stores, but I call her our inspiring leader.
Yeah.
And her face just popped into my head. And I thought, that's what a true manager is, because she is that person. Mm. Like, she's so patient to help people get it when they really need. Whereas I want the big picture and I want to keep creating the strategy of the brand and communicating what the products are and what our story is and the lifestyle side of the brand. And that's when I realized that I'm the artist and the creative.
Mm. Which is so funny, because you've gone full circle back to the art that you were so passionate about. Yes.
Exactly.
Yes.
So for me, the key roles have been getting good manager leaders. And because we've got the three divisions of the business, we have the wholesale, the retail, and the manufacturing, having staff in those roles that can lead them just in the same way as if I am. It's not necessarily that they're in charge of the strategy, because I still love doing that, but they're in charge of the people and making sure, I like to call them my implementers, that's like they implement the strategy for me.
Yep. And I talk about them in arms and legs sometimes as well.
Yeah, that's a cool way to look at it.
Yeah. So, and it's not to say that they don't have brains, but you come up with the idea, the strategy, and then you need arms. So Michelle and AJ, my team right now, are my arms and legs.
Perfect. And they love it when you're doing that thinking.
Yeah.
And they'll still brainstorm it with you.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. They sense awesome check it big time.
Into it. Yeah. But yeah, you can't be all of those parts. And the other thing that I would say were the key roles for me are the ones that have longevity. And in fact, each of those people have had huge longevity in the company. So I've got staff that, I mean, besides Karen, who's been with us the 12 years, our bookkeeper, she's been with us.
You write about her a lot in the book. Yeah.
11 years, Simona. She left to have two little boys, and then she's come back. She's moved to different seats within the company.
Yeah.
And I think that's been the key for me. The people that have been with us the long time, but they've been happy to start where they were needed and perhaps even multitask several different roles. And then as the business has grown, you can see where their strength is to really put them on that seat.
Mm.
But they've been happy to do that.
Mm.
Totally willing. And in fact, they'll put their hand up when they see something come up that's not even in their role that they can see that I'm struggling with because I don't have a support network for it. And they're like, do you need me to help with that?
Oh,
yeah. Wow. So I would say key isn't just the roles. It's not just outsourcing your own weaknesses to somebody that's stronger in them, but it's also getting people that have longevity that are just as invested in your vision as you are.
So you're obviously the artist. Can you see, is Paul the entrepreneur then? Do you just not have that in your... And no, it was the idea that you should have all three or no?
Well, we didn't get as far as that because I guess you can outsource that. Like that is what you can hire. But no, I would say Paul's definitely a creative as well.
Yes, he's an artist too. Interesting. So you've hired...
It is interesting.
Makes total sense.
So he always had me to manage the people previously. I stepped into that role.
Yeah.
But then as I've now needed, all that I need to do in my mind is to lead my leaders and then they lead their people.
Well, you lead the leaders and then they can go and lead and manage.
Exactly.
Yeah. So simple.
Yeah.
Simple. I love it. And now we should probably start wrapping up this interview because I feel like we've been here for about 17 hours in a good way. I've got a million more questions. So I want to ask you a few quick fire questions, but first of all, I just want to ask, so obviously, like, what's the vision with IKU? Are you going to sell it? Are you...
I've always said that I'll take IKU as far as I can without ever holding it back.
I
know that, as we've talked about, there's so many global opportunities, so many opportunities for more aggressive growth than what I've been interested in. I'll always take it as far as I feel that the brand is still progressing and growing, which... I'm just loving seeing the growth that is happening organically. But if ever there comes a day that I feel like I'm holding that back through my own perhaps fear of it changing my life or fear of my own skill set to take it to that next level, that would be when I would be looking to hand that on to the next person that could take it to that next level. But I have to say, so far, I've just learned it all along the way. And I think the more that you do, the braver that you get to trust that every new opportunity that comes up, you'll always find a way to learn how.
Sage words. And so what you're doing now, you've obviously just published your book.
Yes.
Which is available so people can buy it on the IKU website and in stores.
Correct.
Yeah. And it's beautiful.
So IKU, like, you've done an incredible job. I'm so proud of this book.
Yeah.
I don't think, and I love writing. Yeah. I honestly don't think I'll ever have another book in me that
goes
as in-depth as that.
Wow.
Like I really did live and breathe that over. I started writing it, you know, like five years ago and then the last 6 months intensively. But of course it was such a great story to share as well.
Yeah. Now I want to ask you some quick fire questions, please. What's one thing you would say to someone who's about to start her business or his business?
What I would say is make sure that you build longevity into yourself and your role because the journey is just, it's the demands are relentless.
Yeah.
They're there 24/7, whether you're, you know, working in it or not, even when you're switched off, you're never fully switched off. So what I would say is make sure that you create breathing space and gaps between all of your big projects so you can catch your breath along the way.
Yeah. And have a pole on your shoulder to make you do that.
Absolutely.
Which comes in useful. Amazing. My next question then was, what would you say to someone who's seeking to scale her business? And I love that we've touched on this because I know with the women that I talk to in business, scaling is, you know, priority number one, other than, you know, just keeping enough money coming in to manage. And what's one thing you would say to someone who's looking to scale?
I would say start seeing your goal for scaling as being like stepping stones across a river. You can never just do it in one leap. It's always a series of steps and you can't skip that process. So enjoy the journey of taking one step at a time. And then if ever you feel frustrated, because I think for a lot of us high achievers, it's in our nature to look across at the bank and go, why am I not there yet? Then just remember to just stop for a moment and look back at how many steps
you've
already done
to
encourage you to go, this is now, if I've done that, then I can do this and I will get there and I'm going to enjoy it along the way.
That's such a good tip. And this is so, it sounds so unrelated, but it's triggered this thought for me. I just made cashew cheese for the first time at the weekend. God. And my friend Stace came over to teach me how to do it. And she put an elastic band at the top. So you have the cashew cheese in the jar and then you pour the olive oil on top. And then she got an elastic band and put it around the kind of top of the cashew cheese bit before it hits the olive oil. And the whole thing is that she said, you look at it and think nothing's happening, but you need to see that the cashew cheese apparently in 3 days' time, it will start to rise. And once it's risen about half a centimeter, then it's ready. So I think it's exactly what you're saying, isn't it? It's like we think nothing's happening because we're watching the freaking cashew cheese and nothing's happening. But if we have that benchmark in place to go, well, this is where I was versus this is where I am. And I think also there is something to be said for sometimes it does feel like one step forward and two steps back because you're trying to finesse it and get it right. And, you know, sometimes the hire won't work out, but it's about, looking backwards and going, well, I'm further ahead than I was last month or last year or 3 years ago. So that's that sense of forward motion. That's such good advice. Okay, I'm getting myself hungry talking about my cashew cheese. And for someone who's decided it's time to sell, so I know you personally haven't sold and it doesn't sound like there's any immediate plans to do so. I'm sure you're connected with to some people like I am who have sold their businesses. What's the one thing you would say to someone who's selling? Or maybe you're someone who's looking at other businesses, purchasing another business.
I think change is fantastic. And I think we should never presume that we have to stay in the same place. So
yes.
Even with our day spa, I closed our day spa after 3 years because it just didn't feel like it was serving me well in my own lifestyle, and that was a distraction from the brand. We had a homeware store as well that we also closed.
Oh yeah, after didn't even talk about that.
After a couple of years. So I think don't worry about what other people are thinking. Trust your own instincts. But what I would ask of that woman is if she's wanting to sell because she's overwhelmed and she's just had enough, because it can, yes. I think we all have those moments.
Yes.
Then I would say to her, darling, when was the last time you had a holiday?
Yes. Oh, Naomi, I'm so glad you said that, because, and it, again, my weird analogies, but I remember reading, and I hadn't even had Lexi, our daughter, yet, but I remember reading this woman who was a few months ahead of me, and she was breastfeeding, and she was really struggling to establish breastfeeding. And she said, just one thing I would say is just don't quit on a bad day.
Yeah.
I have talked to some women who, business has just gotten so tough that they're like, nah, tap out.
Yeah.
And it's that, yeah, you're right. Take the holiday, get some EQ products into you,
yeah, definitely.
onto you, get a treatment and yeah, come back fresh.
And I think that's great advice. Way, then great. But I think, you know, everything feels different from a place of rest and relaxation.
God, you're so right. You're so right. I love that. Thank you. Very, 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 very last question. All of this said, our very long interview, which I've loved. What's the biggest thing that being a business has taught you about life?
Oh, so many things. It's been the most incredible journey. I feel so grateful to have had this journey. But I think mostly it's taught me to trust my own instincts and to trust my ability to grow when I need to. And it's also taught me the importance of surrounding yourself with great people because you can't do it on your own. And it also means that you enjoy the journey, you learn from others, and yeah, it's been such an incredible time for me that I wouldn't have replaced it for anything in the world.
Wow, amazing. Thank you so much. We have talked about so much. Is there anything you feel like we've missed?
I think we've covered heaps. Yeah. It's been so great to finally meet in person.
I know, after like an online romance and text message romance.
Absolutely.
Well, thank you so much for joining me today. I know I have personally learned so much from talking to you, and I just feel I need to say to you, like, it's just so wonderful to see someone who's so on purpose and is doing business in such a kind way. You know, it's light. I feel like what I'm getting from you, now that we've actually met in person, I kind of knew this would be the case, but also the EQ brand, which is what you've infused into it, it's just that sense of lightness and positivity. It's like it vibrates at a very high frequency, which I think is why you attract all these amazing opportunities, because you and Paul are there and you bring the brand there and your team obviously keep it there. And yeah,
I think that's why it's been so great to share that through my book as well, because I think it's really allowed people to experience that.
Yeah.
So much more that they can really feel the intention that comes behind the brand. And hopefully that's what you feel when you use an EQ product as well.
You do. As someone who steeped themselves in EQ last night, I can vouch for that. So thank you so much for joining. And obviously I'll link to EQ and your book and everything in the show notes as well. So thank you.
Thank you, Lorraine.
It's a joy. I'm sure you will agree that was a very, very, very special interview. And just encompass so many different parts of Naomi, her relationships, her business approach, her spirituality, all of the things. I just loved having that conversation, and I'm so grateful to Naomi for her generosity and also just the beautiful energy she brings to the business world. To find out more about IKU, you can visit ikou.com.au and follow the brand on Instagram at IKU Inspire. So that is that for this week's episode. Thank you so much, as always, for joining me. And I look forward to seeing you or hearing you again, you hearing me again next week. Thank you for being part of this week's episode. It was remarkable to have you. I am always keen to hear your thoughts, questions, ideas, and suggestions for future topics for the podcast, so please get in touch on Instagram. My handle is at Lorraine Remarks, and through my website, lorrainemurphy.com.au. If you're enjoying what I'm putting out here, please do rate, review, or subscribe to the podcast so more people can find out about it and we can build this special community. Or even better, do all three. Chat to you next week.